Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM. And firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters, and Top Cat is back in the house.
Back in the house.
He was cruising somewhere. We may get a report on that.
Yeah, everything's quiet right now.
There you go.
don't stir up nothing.
Uh-oh.
But they don't know I left the country and come back.
Oh, we're veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. As always, we got an outstanding show coming up for you tonight, but we want to start by thanking some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible.
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ed's Seafood Shed, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, My Ratchet Jaw, Patriot Roofing, and our dear friends at Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens.
And of course, we want to thank all of our sponsors, and you are great listeners, because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And remember, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them, so you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. And if you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired shows are on most of the major podcast sites. Just search SBN or Scuttlebutt. And Tom's Tirade is up on CastBox.com. So if you like to listen on demand, you've got some options there. You can also follow us on Facebook. We've got some information about one of the guests that we're going to speak with. Tonight's on our Facebook page. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And so, Tom, this cruise, where you were gone like forever.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Was this like a secret mission that you were
any
on?
Any damn place but Mexico.
Any place but Mexico. Okay. All right. Okay.
You go on a cruise automobile in New Orleans, you're going someplace in Mexico, dude.
Oh, there you go.
So, been there and done all that.
All right.
So we went to the Eastern Caribbean.
The Eastern?
Like St. Thomas.
Oh, okay. Love St. Thomas.
Grand Turk. Ooh.
Yeah.
Those fine little islands.
Love St. Thomas.
I'm scared about all those hurricanes, though. And we had to call the wizard to get all that stuff pushed away, man.
When you were talking, I said, you know, there is that big hurricane that's out.
Oh, no. We got rid of all those, man. We had to talk to the big man. He took care of all that stuff. We had calm seas, beautiful sunshine, got my face sunburned, you know, from hanging out in the sun too long.
There you go.
But, hey, you need a good vacation every now and then.
There you go. So,
you know what the greatest thing about the whole trip was?
You didn't have to listen to all this crap that was going on in Washington?
Well, that's part of it. Because only, you know what? The only damn thing was on the ship, CNN. That's all they had on TV.
Oh.
So, you know I didn't watch that crap.
There you go. You couldn't get the SEC network?
No. No. None of that's on board. You know? And you can't, if you used your phone or a tablet, that cost you $100 a day, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, I hope I didn't. I hope I didn't cost you too much when I was sending you all those text messages.
It didn't bother me, babe. I just didn't answer them.
Oh, okay. I didn't. Some of the time you can't avoid it.
Oh yeah. But anyway, the greatest part was, it sure was nice to get home. You know,
it's nice to go away, but it is nice to get home.
It's nice to go away, but it's nice to come home.
Did you read anything good?
Oh, I read two complete books while I was gone.
You're not going to tell us what they're.
No.
Did they have pictures?
No. No, they didn't have no pictures. I looked. How about the Why Marines Fight?
They're okay because the frozen, they're Marines.
The Frozen Chosen.
There you go.
Yeah, all those good Marine books. Yeah. Catching up on some of those slang words and some of those abbreviations that we didn't have in the 50s when I was in there.
Oh boy. But well, good. It's good to have you back. Glad you
we enjoyed it. We had a blast, and we'll go again. I want to go to Alaska next time.
I can't see you in Alaska freezing where you're in.
I'll take my big old shoot gun, you know, and shoot me a bear.
There you go.
Go bear hunting.
Oh, boy. Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, back to the show. Later on SBN, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jacob Hyde. How would you like to have the name Dr. Hyde? Isn't that kind of the reverse?
It's supposed to be
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I'm going to ask him where his brother is, Jekyll.
Yeah, but anyway, he's from the University of Denver and the organization Fight or Die, that's OAR Die. He's going to discuss their training happening here in the Mobile area about an upcoming rowing trip across the Atlantic. That's a lot of rowing.
Well, they're going to have a big shindig Saturday, too, now, if you want to see this ship. And meet all these guys firsthand. They'll be at the battleship Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, from 9 to 11.
Sounds good. We'll talk to him to get all the details. Also, the Blue Water Navy is targeting the VA Secretary's hardline approach to their claims. We'll talk about it. Also, military behaviors that might not work so well in the civilian world.
I had problems with that.
blanket parties probably aren't something that they encourage in the. Yeah. Anyway.
The ones that we don't want to talk about.
There you go. And remembering America.
What was that Kavanaugh said? Whatever happened in such and such state there.
Oh my God.
Whatever happened in America is going to stay there, baby.
Oh boy. Anyway, and remembering America's bloodiest battle on its 100th anniversary, and Tom's tirade on law. Means law gives you a little perspective on the current state of affairs. There you go. But first, the care of our veterans in the VA system has been something we've watched closely here at SBN since our founding. Hopefully, we've delivered stories that have been relevant to all of our veterans, regardless of when they served, where they served, what branch they served in. And so it was with some excitement that we embraced a new report from the DAV stating that gaps in health care for female veterans have been narrowed at the VA. Unfortunately, the politicized DAV, Disabled American Veterans, could not stop at reporting the good news. They had to bash the VA for simply providing an equal access VA rather than the one that prioritizes female veterans. And you've got a great report that the DAV produced. And the headline for it is the healthcare gaps narrowing but remain for women veterans. Okay, you know, you had a primarily male-oriented VA system.
Right.
And as you have more female veterans coming into the system, they've been putting more and more systems in place to service our female veterans. And we've covered the gaps. We've talked about them. But the report and the story ultimately came out in Military Update. But one of the gaps that I think is that they are highlighting here, and this is they specifically are referencing, is the in vitro fertilization for veterans. Now, when you think in vitro fertilization for veterans, why would that be a service that the VA would necessarily cover? Granted, you can say there are instances, and I will cite one. Tammy Duckworth, who is currently serving in the Senate, and she became a double amputee when her helicopter, when the helicopter she was piloting was shot down. Her injuries prevented her from naturally conceiving a child. Now, so see, there you have there's a service connection and a medical necessity. But to simply say that, hey, we're going to open up the gates and everyone who's a veteran who's in the VA healthcare system should be accommodated in this way, again, it gets back to the question, last week, what is the VA there for? Is the VA there to be the full-service medical facility for veterans, or is it supposed to be there to treat the injuries that our servicemen and women have incurred while they're on duty, in service? Or is it just now we're going to open it up to if you served, you can come on in and we will take care of every little cough or cold that you have? And if that's the case, we need to think about the funding for the VA. We need to think about the services that they're going to provide, because eventually they will become overwhelmed trying to treat every little pain that someone has versus treating the things that need to be taken care of for our veterans. So, anyway, there's more information there. It's just an interesting juxtaposition in the two stories. But hey, and on the other side of the break, Dr. Jacob Hyde with Fight or Die when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphone. Also, check us out on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And it is a privilege to be joined by Dr. Jacob Hyde from the University of Denver and the organization Fight or Die. That's OAR, Die. Dr. Hyde, welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Hey, thanks for having me on tonight.
Well, first off, I have to ask the question. Do you have a brother named Jekyll?
No, I don't. Commonly heard question, but I'm used to it. Now I'm just the regular old Dr. Hyde. It's pretty boring, actually.
Well, now, you direct the ICE Lab at the University of Denver, which studies how people who live and work in extreme environments like the military are able to cope and grow after being put into stressful situations. But you're also working with an organization called Fight or Die. So tell us a little bit about your connection to that organization.
Absolutely. So again, thanks for having me on. Hey, I'm the director of the ICE Lab at the University of Denver, and ICE stands for Isolated, Confined, and Extreme Environments. And so myself and the graduate students in my laboratory are really interested in figuring out how people who live and work in environments that are small and isolated and relatively extreme, how they live and work in those environments and do relatively well. And so I'm working with an organization called Fight or Die, which is made up of four Army veterans who are about to do a transatlantic row. And so they have built a small custom-made carbon fiber boat. It's 28 foot long, and there's two sleeping compartments, one on either side. And they are voluntarily living and working on this little 28 foot boat for somewhere between about 35 and 60 days. And so they're taking part in a race called the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, which is a UK-based boat race. And they're going to be rowing in this small 28-foot rowboat from La Gomera, Canary Islands, all the way to Antigua. And so they're voluntarily choosing to get in this tiny boat and live and work for somewhere between 35 and 60 days. And so they roped me in to do a little bit of research and to help them kind of get prepared for this expedition. And so that's how we got together.
So, and I know that they are currently training here in Mobile, I think, out at the Buccaneer Yacht Club.
That's right. I'm standing at the Buccaneer Yacht Club looking at it right now and looking at our boat, actually. We're out here training sort of all day, every day. We've been here for about a week. We'll be here for another 2 weeks. And today we were out training in Mobile Bay, so we saw some saw some shrimp boats. We saw some big tankers, and I'm sure they looked at us pretty weird in our little 28-foot boat, but we're out here doing the thing.
What's those yahoos from Alabama doing out here in the bay?
Probably exactly what they're thinking.
Yeah, hopefully you did not get caught in any of the rainstorms that came through. But
no,
I guess
it rained on us a little bit, but we were already pretty wet.
So how do you train, how do you prepare for an environment such as that for that extended period of time, you know, a couple of months?
Good question. So, you know, these guys have been undergoing some pretty extensive physical training where they've been practicing rowing, but also just doing general physical fitness in order to get their bodies ready for sort of this cycle of work. Because they're going to be rowing for about 3 hours at a time and then sleeping for about 3 hours. And that's going to last somewhere, again, between 35 and 50 to 60 days. And so they'll be on those shifts, 3 hours of rowing, 3 hours of sleeping. And so they've got to get their bodies ready for this. One of the things I'm doing with them is we're getting their brains ready for this, because your body can do so many things you don't even think it can do. And a lot of what drives that performance is your brain power, and is your brain telling your body, hey, I may be hurting, hey, I may be tired, and I can still keep going. And so doing that kind of performance enhancement work to get them ready, that's been really key to what we've been doing, as well as preparing them for the stressors that happen when you put yourselves into a small, isolated environment like this.
Obviously, with them all being Army veterans, I believe they're summer special forces as well. They've right. obviously been through some fairly intense training already in their careers. What's different about this particular environment?
Great question. So none of these guys have ever been on the ocean before or ever been on a kind of water operation like this before. I myself am a combat veteran of the Navy and have never even been on the ocean before. And so between all of us, none of us have really ever touched the water until this. So super curious as to how everybody's going to do. But ultimately, what we know is that in anybody like this, any kind of man or woman who has gone into the military or done some kind of operations that have left them sleep deprived, that have left them exhausted, that have left them sort of really, really stressed out, they have learned how they react to that, which is great. And so these guys are already ready for a little bit of that stress, but there's going to be some different stressors they've never faced before. They've never gone off into the water and lost sight of land. And so even that very first step of losing complete sight of land may be a stressor they've never faced, and we have no idea how they're going to react to it.
Now, Will, you're going to be tracking them in another vessel. Is that correct?
So I won't be on a vessel. I'll be safe and comfy in my air-conditioned home or office in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be able to keep up with them via satellite phone. Okay. And so during the course of this race, you know, there's probably going to be about 20 boats in the race, but once they kind of leave La Gomera, Canary Islands, they're probably going to lose sight of each other relatively quick. So they're going to be out there on their own. So I'll be talking to them via satellite phone on a daily basis, but that's my only real connection.
The electronics that you guys are installing down there now, are they going to be tied to these guys? I don't know what the name of that you call it, but when they're actually hooked up to the electronics that you have, will you be able to read that information while you're in Denver, or is it something that's just going to be cataloged there and then look at later?
Sure, great question. So, you know, they've got all the typical maritime electronics on board, like GPS and an Iridium sat phone and an Iridium Go, those kinds of things, which will allow me to talk to them and do some testing with them over the phone to make sure they're doing okay. But in terms of being able to monitor any sort of like physiological response, like their heart rate or their pulse oxygenation or how they're doing like that, that's something we'd love to do, but we unfortunately don't have the money to be able to perform that kind of science at this time. And so Fight or Die has graciously helped us be able to perform some of the science with them. But Fight or Die is a nonprofit organization who is just raising funds to do this on their own. And so we're kind of limited too by how much money we've been able to raise. So all the science we're doing, we're also, you know, doing the best we can with what little funds we have. But certainly we would love to be able to track some real-time physiological markers like that. It's just right now a function of money that kind of holds us back from doing that.
Well, you see that a lot of our guys from being in services in actual combat have a lot of PTSD and a lot of stress factors related there. Do you see that maybe some of your investigation here would put a light on that, or maybe help our PTSD guys down the road?
Fantastic question. You know, PTSD and traumatic brain injury are two of the biggest talked about issues in our population right now, and they are huge problems. One of the things that we're looking at is trying to figure out how, when people go into these kinds of stressful environments, they don't always come out with problems at the end. So many of our military veterans have gone into extreme environments or have gone into these kinds of stressful environments. And you're right, they do get things like post-traumatic stress disorder after it's over, or they develop depression or substance abuse. And all of those things are terrible. But there is a little bit of science, too, that shows us when you take people and you put them in stressful environments or some extreme environments, they actually come out of it on the other side even better than they were before, with no negative side effects like PTSD or TBI or depression. They actually come out of these environments having grown and right, having become better people and having their life changed in a great way. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out, is how can we put people in these environments and make them grow at the end, right, versus having bad things happen to them.
If you can find technology that would give you that, it would be an awesome advantage to our troops. Next thing is, I mean, what's the reason why would these four guys want to get involved in rowing, you know, this little China cracker little boat thing they call it out there? I mean, what's their incentive in doing this?
That was my very first question when they approached me. When they came to my office at the University of Denver, my very first question was, why?
Well, yeah, why?
And you know, they all have varying reasons, but ultimately, they have all been touched by their military service. They've all lost friends to suicide. They've all lost friends to, you know, explosive devices, or themselves had PTSD or other kinds of issues. And so between their own experiences, watching their friends be hurt or their friends take their own lives, these are four guys who really care about the well-being of their men and women in the armed services. And so they really are doing this to raise awareness for military mental health. They're just trying to show the world that, hey, we're still in two wars, even if you don't think we are, even if it's not being covered in the media, we're still fighting. Not just in two places like Iraq and Afghanistan, we're in over 90 countries around the world conducting combat operations. We have men and women every day doing that. And so this team really wants to just highlight that there's wars still going on, and there's military mental health is one of the most important things to us, and to raise awareness for that.
Outstanding. Doctor, we're coming up on the break. Can you talk to us on the other side of the break?
Absolutely.
Great. Now, you mentioned funding. I'm certain that there have to be resources where folks could donate if they're interested. Where can folks go for more information?
You know, on Facebook, you can look us up at Fight or Die. And remember, that's O-A-R instead of just O-R, like an oar, because we're a rowing team. So Fight or Die on Facebook, Fight or Die on Instagram. But all of it leads to our website, which is usvetrow.org, which is usvetrow.org.
Outstanding. We are talking with Dr. Jacob Hyde from the University of Denver and Fight or Die. We'll talk more with him about their project and how you can support it when we return on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM, firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. Check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And if you like to listen on demand, the podcast of our regularly aired programs are up on most of the major podcast sites. Just search SBN or Scuttlebutt. You can also catch Tom's tirade via podcast on CastBox.com. And we want to thank some of the sponsors, Tom.
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the folks that to continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park. Our sea lawyer, Colin Kimmerly, at the law firm of Gardberg in Kimmerly. Viva Medicare of Alabama. Patriot Roofing, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens.
And we are talking tonight with Dr. Jacob Hyde from the University of Denver and the organization Fight or Die. That's O-A-R Die. Dr. Hyde, thank you so much for talking with us tonight.
Absolutely. It's great to be joining you and kind of talking about what we're doing. It's great to be in Alabama.
Oh, yes. Hey, you're talking about Alabama. Don't you have one of those guys there from Mobile?
Yeah, one of the guys here, Brian Knight, who's on our crew, is originally from Mobile. And, we're kind of doing our training with the great people of the Buccaneer Yacht Club here. And so I think he grew up right here at the Buccaneer Yacht Club.
Oh,
so that's
yeah.
where we're doing some of our training.
Right. That connection is probably why you're there.
Absolutely. Okay. And, they donated us a good amount of space. The good people here brought us food to eat, helped us kind of move some boats. They've
awesome.
Been great to us here.
That's great. Another thing that we're all been talking about since this is a subject has came to our attention here in the Mobile area is that, we're really sincere about seeing what these four guys are going to be able to do and how they're going to compete out there. But is there any way that we can follow them during this 30, 40, 50, 80 days, 60 days, whatever it is?
Absolutely. So, all of our social media channels, Instagram and Facebook, will be covering it with live updates. Our website will have ongoing updates. And then, this part of what the road that they're doing is in a race. It's a big UK-based boat race called the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. And so if you just Google Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, that'll take you right to that website, and there's live GPS trackers on there. You'll be able to see where...
Now, for these guys that are in this race, are they trying to obtain money or get
website,
donations?
You'll be able to see how we're doing.
Are they able to take money or get money, like people that go on a walk across the United States and they get donations? Is that one
Absolutely.
Of the things that they're doing?
Yeah, This is an organization who is a nonprofit organization who is founded upon helping vets. All money that has come to this organization goes to operations. There's no paid staff. I'm not even paid as a, working with them.
Okay.
This is a completely volunteer crew, completely volunteer staff. 100% of the donations we receive goes to making this actually work. Anything past making our kind of row across the ocean work will actually get donated back to the University of Denver, which is where I'm housed and my lab is housed. And so since all my research focuses on making military people even better than they already are, any money that we make past this will come back to helping us do that work.
That's the name of the game. If we can help some of our guys that's having some PTSD mental problems due to stress factors or IEDs or something of that nature, that would be awesome. But now, have they figured out mathematically or prospectively about how many times that they will have to row?
Good question. So I did some back of the napkin math on that a few months back.
Back and of a napkin, that sounds like a good bar drink to me.
if we control for all the weather variables and we had flat water with no real issues, no flying fish, and we really could just cruise and just row across the water, we're looking at probably 1.6 million rows per person.
Oh, my Lord.
And so with two guys rowing at a time, we're looking at each person rowing about 1.6 million times, and the typical row pace across the ocean is about 10 to 12 pulls on the oar per minute. And so if we can have a good weather variables, we're hoping to get across this ocean in about 34 days.
Well, I tell you, I see in some of the pictures that you have on the website, these guys are working out down there, and they're popping those big ropes around and all like we do in the gym. But these guys are going to look like Popeye when they get back, man, with those big arms.
They are. They're definitely going to lose some of their lower body mass, and they're going to lose some of that leg muscle, but they are going to come back with some pretty strong shoulders and back, that's for sure.
They got to keep yourself hydrated out there, too.
Absolutely. Hydration is key. About an hour ago, they were up here learning how to put IVs in each other. Just in case they get too dehydrated, they're going to be able to put the IVs in each other, just in case they, it comes down to that.
That's the reason I couldn't go.
Me either, sir.
I can't handle those damn needles.
Exactly.
Well, I had enough of them in the core.
Oh, no. Well, doctor, are they going to have to carry all of their supplies with them from the start, or are there opportunities for them to resupply?
Good question. No resupply drops here. whatever they need, they start with. So they're taking all dehydrated food, which they'll just be rehydrating with water. There's a water maker and desalinator on board so that we can make our own water out of the ocean water. So everything that we need is on this boat. This is a completely unsupported race, and if we receive any outside support from anyone, we're disqualified out of the race. So everything that we do, we have on the boat, and so it's there. Sort of, if you think like the space station, once you're on it, all you have is your people and the stuff that's there, and that's it.
Wow. I've been into some extreme sports, extreme racing, but I don't know that I'd want to do this one.
I'll pass that on back down the line.
Yeah. You mentioned the International Space Station. Obviously there are some applications for the research that you do to the space program. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. So, you know, as we begin to think about how we are going to get people to Mars, we really have to best understand who is going to make up that kind of crew. Is it going to be men and women? Is it going to be all women? Is it going to be all men? Is it going to be multiple nationalities? Will they be somebody from US, the UK? Will they be a mix there? Will they just be from one country? So we need to better understand how we're going to select and who we're going to select to go on that mission. And as once we select these people, we need to then know exactly how to train them to stay resilient and to be able to get through the stressors of a 2-year-long mission. Because once they leave Earth, they're going to be gone for about 2 years to get all the way to Mars, do some things on Mars, and then turn around and come back. And so very similar to this boat race, which is only up to 60 days, we're putting a crew on a capsule that's going to be gone for 2 years. So we have to prepare them really well on the front end, so that they can survive and thrive throughout that entire 2-year-long mission. Kind of science that we're getting is really going to help us better prepare astronauts on that kind of crew.
I certainly hope they got a better motor than ours.
Me too. Those rocket motors are pretty cool, though.
Yeah, I liked the freeze-dried ice cream when I was a kid, but I don't know if I'd want it for 2 years.
No, not for 2 years.
That was always nice. It was a nice treat.
Yeah. Right. The Tang is great, but the freeze-dried ice cream gets old pretty quick.
Yeah, and in MREs, that's 3 lies in 1, so you don't even want to go there.
Exactly.
But, so they're here training. What's up next for them?
You know, they're here training, and they'll be here for about another week and a half, close to 2 weeks. Saturday, if you're any listeners you have that may be interested in kind of meeting them, and they're here in the Alabama or maybe the northern Florida area, they're going to be out at the USS Alabama, if people know where that is. They'll be out there doing a meet and greet. The boat's going to be out there. People can come out and check out the boat. They can stick their head in the little cabin and see where these four big dudes are going to live for a while. They're going to be doing a meet and greet out there this Saturday from 9 to 11 in the morning. But other than that, every day that they're here, they're working on different classes. They're learning about psych from me. They're learning tonight how to do IVs. They're learning from some of the world's best rowers who are here, who also built their boat, Spindrift Rowing. They're learning from them how to actually row their boat really well. But you may even catch sight of us out here in Mobile Bay. So if you see a little gray boat with a warthog mouth on the front of it, that's us. That's us rowing around, so don't hit us. But feel free to honk your horn or let us know that you're around. So that's where we're going to be, is here at the Buccaneer Yacht Club, right, rowing around in Mobile Bay, and then definitely on Saturday between 9 and 11 at the USS Alabama.
Outstanding. I was looking at some of the pictures of the craft, and I couldn't tell if it was the A-10 Warthog or if it was the Flying Tigers that they were, you know, from back in World War II.
Yeah, it was the A-10 Warthog for sure. These are Army guys, and you don't have to be in the Army to know what the A-10 Warthog is, or that it's a tank killer, or that it can be your best friend in combat. I know that I was saved by an A-10 Warthog at one point. And so they really have a respect for the kind of weaponry that platform provides. But I think given their Army background, they just love the Warthog, and they certainly love the way that it looks. So they put that shark mouth or that Warthog mouth on the front of this boat, and boy, does it look cool when it's kind of out here in Mobile Bay.
Oh, and it absolutely does. It looks great out of the water.
It does. It looks cool, but it looks like a shark when it is in the water. It's amazing.
So was the craft specifically designed for this mission, or is this a craft that has been utilized before that they're utilizing?
You know, there's people have used various kinds of crafts, and the race rules state certain kinds of dimensions and specifications for the crafts. But it's very important. It was very important for this team to have a USA made boat and have a USA made sort of supply list, trying to make everything that they do made here, right here in the homeland in America. And so there is only one boat builder in America who makes boats like this, and that's Spindrift Rowing out of Port Townsend, Washington. And their boat builders, founded by Sonia Baumstein, who's here right now, they have built us the boat from scratch. They designed it, they engineered it, they laid the carbon fiber, they put in the electronics, and they're here right now teaching us to row it around. And so that is the only American boat builder who does this. And so there's only one other real boat builder, and that's in the UK. And so we're very lucky that we have that here in America to kind of tap into their expertise.
Awesome. And we're coming up on the break. But this is the first all U.S. Service member team, from what I understand.
It is. It is the first military team that has ever taken part of this. There's another American team this year taking part, but they're not military vets. But this is certainly the first military team who's ever taken part in this, and I'm proud to be a part of that. You know, guys, I really appreciate you having me on the show tonight, hearing about what we're doing with Fight or Die. Again, if the listeners want to come out and meet the crew, they'll be out at the USS Alabama from 9 to 11 this Saturday. You might see us rowing around Mobile Bay. But if you can, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, or usvetrow.org.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Jacob Hyde, we thank you for joining us, and thank you for your support of the crew and their mission. We look forward to hearing great things from them.
Absolutely, and we look forward to talking with you guys again once it's over and letting you know how we did. Thank you guys so much for your work.
Sounds great. For more information, you can check out our Facebook page. We have more information on Fight or Die on the other side of the break. Tom's tirade on Law Means Law. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3.
With just a few weeks left in her Air Force career, Captain Mary Bell Jarzabek decided to vent a little. She posted a few messages on a U.S. Senator's Facebook page supporting the lawmakers' push to overhaul the military justice system for sexual assault cases. Not long afterward, and not surprisingly, Jar Jar received an email from a higher-ranking officer informing her that she was under criminal investigation. The allegations? That she had wrongfully advocated, quote, a partisan political cause and expressed opinions online that could undermine public confidence in the Air Force. Now, Jar Jar is a military lawyer, so you might think that she has pretty good grasp of the UCMJ. Of course, your community organizer in chief, Obama, is a constitutional lawyer, and you see where that has gotten us. Anyway, Captain Jar Jar is assigned as part of a new program to represent victims of sexual assault. Although the Defense Department has promoted the program as a success story and part of a broader campaign to crack down on sex crimes within the armed forces, Jar Jar had grown disillusioned and said she felt that the Air Force was papering over deeper problems. Quote, changes are needed, and it's time that the public knew about the military's true dirty little secrets. She wrote December the 2nd in a long comment posted on the Facebook page of Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York. Unfortunately for Jar Jar, under military regulations, uniformed personnel are prohibited from publicly participating in overt political causes. For instance, appearing at a rally in uniform or endorsing a candidate is forbidden. And in her Facebook post, Jar Jar identified herself as an active duty Air Force lawyer, which apparently is what drew the attention of her superiors and prompted the investigation. On December the 23rd, after a brief investigation, Jar Jar said she was notified by the investigating officer that she had been found guilty of the allegation. However, the punishment was decidedly mild. She was given verbal counseling, or a warning not to do it again. And although the outcome won't appear as a black mark on our official military record, Jar Jar called the investigation a thinly veiled attempt to retaliate against her for advocating too strongly for sexual assault victims. Or maybe someone in the chain of command was actually following the damn rules. In an interview, she also questioned the timing, noting that her departure from the service was imminent. After a 5-year career, she is out of the Air Force. Quote, "I told the truth," said Jar Jar, 34, who was stationed at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. "I do believe they are trying to silence me and also send a message to other special victim counsels who agree with me but are afraid to speak up. Hey, here's a thought. Why not wait until you get out of the damn military before you start your career as a lobbyist? I am certain that Princess Gillibrand from New York would be more than happy to have you on her staff to parade around the halls of Congress, once proud by the likes of true lady killer Ted Kennedy." What a bunch of crap. Air Force Colonel Christine Kajic, the investigating officer who upheld the allegations against Jar Jar, did not respond to an email seeking comment. Wait, the investigating officer who did her damn job was a woman? That must have really pissed off the progressives trying to transform America one law at a time. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Kearns, an Air Force spokesman at the Pentagon, said he could not discuss details of Jar Jar's case because of privacy restrictions. What the hell, privacy restrictions? Hell, she put it on Facebook. That's about as private as Michelle Antoinette Obama's trips to Turkey. In a statement, Kearns said the Air Force is strongly committed to combating sexual assault and has actively listened to feedback and suggestions concerning military justice improvements. He said any Air Force members who, like Jar Jar, believe that they have been retaliated against have the right to file a complaint with the Defense Department's Inspector General. Jar Jar said she decided not to go that route because such cases typically go nowhere. Wow. So starts the social justice transformation into the military justice system. You heard it here first on SBN, but back to the story. The military's record of investigating and prosecuting sexually assault cases has been a sensitive subject for some at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill. Some members of Congress and the COIC, Barack Obama, have demanded reforms amid a surge in reported, and I emphasize reported, incidents of rape and sexual abuse. As we have highlighted here and has been verified by civilian DOD employees working with sexual assaults in the military, the percentage of sexual assaults in the military is equal to or below that in the general population. So why all the fuss? PR for Obama and some in Congress? Disclaimer. One real sexual assault in the military is one too many, and the damn perverted creep needs to be sentenced to Gitmo. Hey, maybe OB might go for that. Even though most military lawyers don't file charges, as opposed to the military commanders in question, because of the lack of evidence necessary to secure a conviction, military commanders, under political pressure, have adopted a host of administrative and legal changes and have made clear to their troops that the issue is a top priority. But some lawmakers have been pressing for more radical changes. Foremost has been a bill introduced by Gillibrand that would strip commanders of the authority to oversee investigations into sexual assaults and other serious crimes, giving those powers to uniformed prosecutors. Pentagon lawyers have lobbied heavily against her proposal, saying it would undermine commanders and diminish their ability to maintain order and discipline. Gillibrand's measure in March failed to clear a procedural hurdle. Gillibrand has been pushing for another vote in early December when Jar Jar posted her supportive comments on the senator's Facebook page. Quote, "I admire her bravery in speaking her mind because I have heard from many other active duty service members who have encouraged me privately to keep moving forward but are afraid to say it publicly out of fear of retribution or retaliation," Gillibrand said in a written statement. "I think the message being sent here is very clear. Unless you are going to toe the company line, shut up, or we will punish you." Wow. Gillibrand should know how that feels as a member of Harry Reid's Senate. That notwithstanding, Jar Jar violated the UCMJ, and she is now trying to hide behind both her gender and the non-existent scourge of sexual assault in the military in order to deflect attention from her lawbreaking post. And while she is entitled to her First Amendment right to speak, she is not entitled to disregard the rules that she has sworn to uphold. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. And by the way, that is a privilege left for the ass wagons in Congress and the White House. Just figure it out. It's common sense.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Hold up, sir!
understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
I think Tom said something about the folks in Congress.
Yeah, all my friends up there.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Those were waggers up there.
Hey, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans. Enjoyed the show.
Awesome.
It was good talking to Larry off air. He had a question. Navy veteran had a question about some college benefits that for dependents. And so we were glad to talk to him. Hey, you know, Tom, was it 100 years ago, this time period, the America fought its deadliest battle ever. More than 26,000 U.S. soldiers killed, tens of thousands wounded, more ammunition fired than in the whole Civil War in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive of 1918, when America went to go and save the French once again. This was the first time, but this World War One.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, you know, the old joke of, you know, French military rifle dropped once, never fired.
Yeah. Sale cheap.
Yeah, for sale cheap. Anyway, but that's going to bring us to the close of this edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. We thank you for joining us. Hope that you will join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah!